Welcome to Relationships 2.0 with author and clinical psychologist, Michelle Skeen. Michelle and her guests will endeavor to guide you through the pathways for self-understanding that'll help you create and maintain safe and healthy relationships. You can find Michelle on the internet at michelleskeen.com. Now the host of Relationships 2.0, Michelle Skeen.
Welcome to Relationships 2.0. I'm Michelle Skeen. My special guest today is Jeremy Cage. He is the author of All Dreams on Deck, Charting the Course for Your Life and Work. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks very much, Michelle. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. I want to tell you, I've never had so many notifications on LinkedIn because I liked your book. And so every time someone else liked your post or commented on it, I got a notification. I was like, wow, I'm super popular on LinkedIn. And then I'd go to my notifications and be like, oh, it's another notification about Jeremy Cage. So you have a lot of fans.
Sorry about
there.
That.
That's okay. That's okay. It was fun. It made me even more excited about interviewing you. But you have a lot of fans. You have a lot of loyal supporters. This isn't even Facebook. This is, you know, where we go to kind of network about our work. So clearly your work has impacted a lot of people personally and professionally.
Yeah, I think that, and as I talk about in the book, and I'm sure we'll get into during the course of the hour, I actually think that dreams belong in both places. I think dreams are the most powerful force in the planet. If you think about our country started as a dream, I think mm-hmm. every company, every brand, every product, every service all started as a dream. And every relationship, also started with a dream. And if you actually think, you know, take it to us as individuals, we started as a dream, you know, for our parents. So I think that I hope that the book really straddles both. It helps folks in both their business ventures and life, and also in their personal relationships.
Well, I think you've done an excellent job of straddling both, and I think our relationships are, you know, the core of everything that we do in our lives. And for you to share your personal adventure with people and have it cross over into your professional adventure and how people should approach life in personal and business is really helpful. I think everyone loves a story and everyone really wants to create a connection with the storyteller. And so to that end, you discuss a lot of this in the book, but let's kind of start a little bit, go back a little bit and have you explain what you studied when you were younger. You talk about your time in college and how you kind of pivoted throughout your life and what kind of work you were doing and how you've been helping businesses. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm English originally. I became a U.S. citizen a little while ago.
Congratulations.
I'm one of those pesky
or not, depending upon how you're feeling. I don't know if we can really say that anymore, but no, I'm kidding. I'm a proud American.
I moved around Europe a lot as a child and then moved to the United States in high school. Finished high school, and I went to college, and I was thinking for some reason that I should be in pre-med or pre-law or something like that, and I was a disaster at it. I mean, I was a complete square peg in a round hole, and I had this French professor, Dr. Strawn, who was wonderful. I went to a very small liberal arts college,
mm-hmm.
and he just sat me down, and he said, look, major in what you love doing, and the rest will take care of itself. And so I actually listened to him, and I did it. I changed my major. I majored in French and minored in painting and sculpture, and then, of course, logically went from there to straight into Procter & Gamble. out of college.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I was living international, living and working internationally with Procter & Gamble for 16 years of my the first 16 years of my career. So that was England, that was the U.S., then it was Stockholm, then it was London, and then we were down in Caracas, Venezuela, then Sao Paulo, Brazil, then back up to the U.S., and then I joined PepsiCo and went down to Mexico for 5 years to work on there, to run the snacks business that they have in Mexico. And it was from there that we took a sabbatical and took our kids out of school, and we sailed around the world. And when I came back, I came back as chief marketing officer of the international foods business for PepsiCo and did a few more things before leaving PepsiCo to be CEO of a technology company. And now I have a consulting company and three other companies that I'm co-founder and director of.
So you don't do much. Sounds like you're just doing a lot of binge watching on Netflix.
Got it. You're, sit back and watch TV. That's real life.
Yeah. Now, that's a lot. But, you know, so let me just say this for those of us who aren't overachievers like you sound like you are. That sounds really intimidating. And you obviously dream very big. And you say this in the book, but it doesn't have to be, you know, you say to people who are reading the book, you don't have to have like these enormous dreams or be a co-founder of Facebook or whatever, that you want everyone to, you know, this should all be kept in perspective. So you need to take it down a few notches for people who aren't quite, who might not dream as big and might find that really intimidating or have a lot of fear around that.
Yeah, I think I try to really underscore this clearly in the book. It's about, you know, I think every human being that's wandering around believes they have a certain amount of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be defined somewhat by their circumstances, you know, but they have a sense of what their potential is. So to me, it doesn't matter whether it's not about me. I use the examples of my life to demonstrate that I think if you dream specifically and you really go after it using the kind of approach that I lay out in the book,
right,
then you increase your chances of that happening. But it's the most important thing is that each individual that reads it defines what they believe is their true potential and tries to figure out like how do they go about it, how, you know, achieving those dreams. So it's not about, I know an awful, for a lot of people they think, you know, what a nightmare that guy's, you know, have to live in all of these different countries and learn all these different languages, and that's totally fine. It's how you define your potential, you know, yourself, not how I define it for you.
Right. But a lot of people can get locked into a fixed idea about themselves, and that coupled with maybe a fear of failure holds them back.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But I think that we don't spend enough time looking at we talk about fear of failure and the risk associated with going with your dreams. I don't think there's enough conversation on the risk associated with not pursuing those dreams.
Right.
Because I think, you know, you end up, you know, at the end of your days looking on a life of sort of woulda, coulda, shoulda. And I think the cost of that is significantly higher than the risk. I think the risk of that is significantly greater than the risk of actually going for it while you can.
Oh, I completely agree. So in the books that I write, we would have the reader go through listing the costs of avoidance. So once you've identified things that you value, you know, identifying values and, you know, or maybe dreams that you have, and then to help deal with overcoming the fears, you would look at the costs of avoidance, which of avoiding pursuing what it is that you want. And that is very motivating you know, and for people who, let's say, even have, you know, high anxiety and avoid certain situations, like, you know, if they have like social anxiety or whatever, they avoid being with people. Well, that's a big cost, you know, of not having connections, not having meaningful relationships. So once you look at, and I think so often people don't, and you point this out so well in your book, you look at what you are missing out on.
Yeah, I mean, in the book, I talk about the fact that one of my dreams as I was coming out of college was to get married and have a family. But my behavior was inconsistent with that dream.
Yes.
So I would get very, you know, I'd get into a relationship and then I'd get close and then I would get scared and I'd run away.
Right.
And then the cycle would go, you know, around and around again.
That was probably out of awareness for a while for you, right?
You know, yeah, like I didn't even think about it.
You weren't
while.
Even thinking and about it. Weren't recognizing that pattern. So one of the
but
things.
Once I,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you talk about writing things down. I think that's really important too. And that's how we notice patterns. It's really difficult to think about our own patterns when we're in it, you know, to bring awareness to that without having, you know, making that connection by putting it on paper and looking at it. You were in this relationship pattern that you probably didn't even recognize that you were avoiding this dream, you know, slash something that you had put a high value on.
That's right. But then once you build that awareness, or at least this is what I've found, is having built that awareness that, okay, well, that really is the pattern that I'm living, I was faced with a relatively binary choice. I either change the dream or I change my behavior.
Right.
So it actually puts it in a nice sharp contrast that you know, like I needed to break out of the story that I'd created for each of those failed relationships.
Right.
And either, you know, change the dream or change my behavior.
That you hit on something really important. We're all really smart and really good at creating stories that are kind of excuses for why we didn't pursue something, why something didn't work out. And I'm sure, I mean, you see that a lot with people personally and in business, right? I don't know, you talk about your father-in-law, and certainly, you know, he sounds fabulous, and it sounds like he was very happy, but as an example of someone who had a lot of really great ideas but didn't kind of do anything to move these ideas along, they were just in his head. There was never any action to do anything, and you were saying that, you know, right now there are products that exist that he actually thought of before they ever existed, but then didn't take those steps. And I don't know about you, but I'm a big fan of Shark Tank, and I love seeing how people have taken an idea and gone through all of those steps. It's a lot of work. Especially if they're inventing something, and then, you know, they've done prototype. There's just so much that you have to do, but clearly these are people who are really passionate, and in some cases they're living on so little money just to try and make this dream come true for themselves. And what is it about them that sets them apart from those of us who are watching the show going, wow, that's a cool, oh yeah, I thought of that, you know, 5 years ago. You know, when I was a freshman in college, I invented for this, like, advertising marketing class I was taking a home HIV test. I mean, I think that had just kind of, like, was coming out that people had, you know, the HIV like AIDS thing, and like, yeah, you know, we had a home pregnancy test, and now there are all of these tests that are out there now. Of course, I wasn't a scientist, and this was all just a thing, but I bet everyone has ideas like that.
Well, you do. The way that I've kind of consolidated that as much as possible is that I think that there's a big difference between those who dream vaguely and dread specifically versus those who dream specifically and dread vaguely. So let me give you a little bit of it. So
yeah, say more.
I think if you have a vague dream of one day I'd like to sail around the world, or one day I'd like to invent a great product, or one day I'd like to run my own company, whatever, those are all vague dreams. And so when you have vague dreams, then what ends up happening is that the fears or the dreads or the obstacles can just mount up, and they actually paralyze you from ever achieving those dreams. So which I reference a lot in the book is our sailing around the world. If we'd have just said one day we want to sail around the world with our kids, then, which is a vague dream, I think we'd never have done it, because people have said, okay, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you're putting your kids in danger. What about their education? What about your mortgage? What about taking a break mid-career? Blah, 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 blah. And before you know it, it would never have happened.
Right.
So what I encourage readers to do and your listeners to do would be to flip that on its head. Dream specifically as possible, mm-hmm. and then you just deal with the dreads and the fears one by one. So we said we want to go when the kids are old enough that they can remember it, they can participate, it can shape them, they could learn a lot. But
right.
but we still wanted them to be young enough that it was okay to be with mom and dad. And for those who have kids, you know, that's a pretty short window.
It is.
So we said, okay, so we need to go when Bradley's 12 and Elena's 10, which means that we need to set sail in 2007. Okay, so now what do we need to do to make that happen so that we can actually set sail in 2007? What is all the mm-hmm. planning and preparation we need to do to get there? And so my challenge to your listeners and to you, and really answering your question in a bit of a long-winded way, I'm sorry.
But no, I love long-winded.
Is to challenge yourself to dream as specifically as possible, because mm-hmm. I find that the more specific you can get about that dream, and you just deal with the fears and the dreads and the obstacles as they come up one by one, but you never take your eye off the dream, and you have a significantly greater chance of actually achieving it.
It's one of the reasons that, I mean, this was, your adventure, it was real and also metaphorical. It's one of the reasons that I love using the adventure metaphor, because there are so many aspects of an adventure, whether it's what you did or, you know, last year, I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and I'll do another one of the seven summits this year. But there are very specific things you have to plan for. There's gear that you need. So you really have to kind of drill down on something like that. And you're asking the same thing of people who are dreaming of things that aren't, you know, that might be work dreams or whatever versus, you know, a physical activity that you need, you know, you need to lay out your plan for working out, how you're going to build up to this, you know, physical feat, what kind of supplies you're going to need, that kind of
yeah.
thing. Like you're factoring in so many things in an outdoor adventure, like weather and all of this other stuff. And you're having people do the same type of thing, only
yeah.
in a work type thing. So I really love the way you wove the two together.
But I also think that, just to build on what you're saying, I it doesn't just have to be the sail around the world or climbing Everest dream.
Right.
I think you know, let's take a broken relationship with your son or daughter or mother or father. It's like, okay, so what, you know, as opposed to just saying I wish I had a better relationship with my son, or I wish I had a better relationship with my mother. Okay, how do you get as specific as possible? What does that even look like? What is the dream for that relationship? And once you've got as specific as possible about the dream for that relationship, then how intentional are you actually going to be in achieving, in going after that dream? And what are you doing to plan and prepare for that dream to come to life. And I say, I think this is where we get a little bit lazy, because you know, we might have that vague dream of, I want a beautiful relationship with my mother, but mm-hmm. you know that I have actually a great relationship with my mother. But with whoever. But so I would urge your listeners to be as specific as possible for those kind of dreams as well, because I think the more specific you are about it, the more intentional you are about it, and the more you plan and prepare to make it happen, then you're actually going to summon the courage to achieve the dream.
Right. So you have this kind of also, and I want you to take us through the steps, but you're creating steps so that it becomes more manageable and less overwhelming.
Well, that's the intent, yes. And I think what ends up happening is, as you pursue those steps, whatever dream it is that you have, and I think people should have multiple dreams at the same time. That's why I say call all of your dreams on deck, not just one.
Right.
I think that as you prepare, as you plan and as you prepare, you're building your courage muscle. It's just like if you mm-hmm. let a muscle atrophy, it's not going to work. So as you build, as you do the training, as you prepare, for example, in your instance, you know, you get the gear, you train with the gear, you get yourself physically fit.
Right.
All of those are not only preparing you, propelling you towards your dream, but they're also building your courage muscle, because you know you're ready and you can do it.
Right.
And I think that's a not unimportant component in actually propelling yourself towards your dreams.
You know, I like what you say about having multiple dreams at one time. I think, so I live in San Francisco, and there's a big tech community here, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
What I see a lot are a lot of people who are just solely focused on work, and they don't have a balanced life. And they're ignoring important, I call them domains. So they're ignoring their relationships, they're ignoring kind of connection with community, maybe the area of health and fitness, maybe some the spiritual aspect of their life, family, friends, that kind of thing. They're solely a focus on work, and then other things suffer. And also, when you're focused on one thing or one person, that just feels like everything. So if there's a hiccup, it can be taken as a bigger setback than when you have multiple dreams going simultaneously. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I mean, we're fully in sync. Because I have a nautical sort of background, I talk about your lifeboat. I think a lifeboat is a lifeboat. If you throw everything into a lifeboat, it's going to sink. First of all, in a lifeboat, so you have to prioritize. You have to figure out what's important. In a lifeboat, you have these things called grab bags, which like are the important things that are going to keep you alive. And so I challenge readers so you call them domains, I call them grab bags. So what are the most important grab bags you have in your lifeboat, and what are the dreams that you have for each of those? So that obviously, I think I have seven or eight. I have work, which is obviously an important one, but there's work, there's family, friends, spirit, not spirit, and because faith is a separate one, I think, than spirit. At least in my mind, I divide the two up. And philanthropy. So, I look at each of those buckets and say, okay, so what are the dreams that I have for each of those? And you know what? If my work bucket gets thrown out of whack, then it's only one part of my life that gets thrown out of whack, not my whole life that gets thrown out of whack.
Right.
And that's the flaw, I think, in this concept of work-life balance. It assumes that it's about a 50-50 weighting, so all of a sudden work gets thrown out of whack or your personal life gets thrown out of whack and everything goes to hell in a handbasket, and that's not necessary. I don't think that's neither necessary or healthy.
So I love examples, and I think listeners do too. Can you talk about maybe someone you've worked with or a client, and maybe take us through what they were struggling with and how they went about putting your plan into action.
Yeah, there was a guy who worked for me in the UK. I was running a fine fragrance businesses for Procter & Gamble in the UK, so Hugo Boss and this, that, and the other. And this guy was competent. He was not incompetent, but he didn't have the leadership profile that was going to enable him to get promoted. Mm-hmm. And so he was just going to kind of languish there for a while. And I think he was too scared to move because to move to a different company because, over time his self-esteem had kind of spiraled downward because, people were getting promoted around him and no one. So anyway, so that was the situation when I took over this business. And after a while, I sat down with him and I said, okay, so now what are your dreams? What is it that's really important in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And we went through this kind of thing. And it turns out that his real dream was to be owner operator of a restaurant and a bar, and which had nothing to do with fine fragrances whatsoever. And so I said to him, and it took a while to get there. I mean, I'm obviously condensing it, but
yeah, of course.
We had those conversations, and then I said, okay, so here's what I want you to do. I said, you have no project responsibilities. I want you to, I'm giving you 2 months to go, and you're still employed by the company. So you're interviewing from a position of strength. Go out, find a job in the food and beverage industry, and that's your number. I mean, that's our specific dream. Within 2 months, I want you to have found a job. So turns out he got a job with a beverage company, and it was a smaller company. So he got a director title. So not only was he, so what happened? He was able to quote unquote resign from the company instead of being fired.
Mm-hmm.
So his self-esteem was hugely intact. Not only was he not fired, but he was able to tell everybody that he had resigned to go get a director job at another company. So he actually felt great about himself. But more importantly, he was now on track to be trained and to be exposed to and making the connections in the food and beverage industry, which was an important step to him getting to his ultimate dream of owning and operating his own restaurant and bar. So one of the things I talk about, so that's just a real life example of where he was just languishing. He had a vague dream and he was scared to pursue the dream. But I was there to support him and to enable him to get there. And one of the things I'm really proud of is I've done that on multiple occasions. And most of the people who I've had to let go or fire have ended up sending me thank you notes, which is something I'm quite proud of.
Absolutely, and you should be. You know, one of the things that a couple of things stand out for me from that story, and one is that it highlights how much we worry about how other people perceive us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you said, like, he got to be the one to resign, and then he looked good because he was going on to be the director of this other company. Like it looked like he had he'd taken a better position. He was doing something he wanted, all of that kind of stuff. And to me, I think one of the huge obstacles for all of us in terms of our dreams is that we get too wrapped up in what other people are going to think. And how other people are going to view us. I might argue that those people who are on Shark Tank, as an example, are people who maybe don't care what other people think. They're doing it. And that a lot of people who aren't pursuing their dreams or who might be unable to do it without someone like you are worried about what other people are going to think. They're worried about being judged. They are worried about failing or looking stupid or looking idealistic or breaking out of a construct that we have for what success looks like. I'm seeing that with a lot of young people now. you know, they...
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's all around us, isn't it? I mean, it, you know, like, yeah. Those messages are reinforced, you know, like, all around us. And, yeah, it's a hard trap to break out of, I think. But I think the piece that's missing in that conversation is the risk of not doing it. You know, so that,
right.
You know, it would have been very easy for me to stay as a senior executive at PepsiCo. It was a quote-unquote prestigious job, you know, at a senior title and lots of stability and this, that, and the other. But I didn't feel like I was learning, you know, enough, and I didn't feel like I was achieving, I was going after some dreams. I felt like I was kind of languishing is the wrong word. That's too harsh a word. But I didn't feel like I was learning.
And, you were no longer feeling challenged, right?
And so, yeah, so I took a job. Everyone looked at me like, what are you talking about? You're going to go be CEO of a small technology company that is struggling and isn't profitable and this, that, and the other. And I said, well, like, it's a completely new challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different challenge. And, you know, it could be a disaster. But it's I'm certainly going to learn something. And so,
right. Well,
yeah. And I think the risk, again, I think we often look at the risks of pursuing our dreams, but we don't often account for the risks of not pursuing them. And I'm actually very grateful that I took that job.
Is being challenged and what you can, what you learn about yourself when you take the risk. And
yeah.
I was thinking about your adventure with your family, and that when we do things like that with people, that we learn so much about ourselves, but so much about others as well. And I'd love to, I don't want this conversation to end without you talking about what that meant to everyone in your family, to have that time doing something that was just brand new for all of you.
Yeah, well, it was an amazing family experience, and it wasn't just the voyage itself. It was, as is always the case, it was also all of the preparation,
right,
for, you know, for the voyage, and then it was also all of the, you know, the different perspective that we all had, you know, once we were back. So, you know, in terms of the preparation, I think, you know, we all had to learn a whole bunch of new skills, and we approached it very much as a family project. So, you know, I took marine diesel mechanics because I wanted to make sure that if the generator or the engines broke down in the middle of the ocean, you know, someone had to fix them, right? And my wife took marine medical training. She took abandoned ship training. How do you abandon ship in a way that maintains the health and well-being of your family?
Mm-hmm.
Our kids took navigation and boat handling training so that if my wife and I were incapacitated or swept overboard, they would be able to safely not only navigate but also handle the boat to get to the next destination. So we all grew very much as a family in preparation for the trip. And then once we were actually on the voyage, there was a tremendous amount of new sort of cultural immersion.
Mm-hmm.
We had to really trust each other, you know, as you're going across. But I think it was great for all of us. We were petrified when we went to go sail across the Atlantic. For the first time, we're going to set sail over 3,000 miles of ocean. We're not going to see land for 21 days. And we don't know what's ahead of us. Even though we'd done all the planning and the preparation, we had to summon the courage as a family to actually set sail. And then fast forward a year later, and we're leaving the Galapagos to go sail to the islands of the South Pacific. It was a longer voyage and over on a more dangerous ocean. And you'd have thought we were going for a little day sail around the bay. I mean, because we'd built the confidence together as a family and individually that we, you know, that we could do it. And so it didn't feel as overwhelming or as scary. And for that lesson to get cemented so deeply in our children's psyche at an early age, for me, I think is priceless.
Absolutely. Do you feel like so your children are how old now?
My son is 21. He is about to graduate from UC Berkeley, out where you live.
Nice.
In mechanical engineering and computer science.
Wow.
And my daughter is studying business at Wake Forest University. She's 19 now.
That's terrific. Do you feel like they take on challenges in a way that maybe they wouldn't have because of this experience? How have you seen it manifest with them in terms of the way they're approaching their lives? They're still really young, but...
Yeah. No, I love the fact, you know, I don't think they're afraid to just try new things and see how they like them.
Right.
And there's so much in that, you know, like, you know, my son has learned to, he was already bilingual in English and Spanish because we lived in Latin America so long, but now he's fluent in Mandarin and in Korean because he thinks it's interesting, you know, and many of us would be so overwhelmed, myself included, to learn Mandarin.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, that's, but the
I'm working on speaking English.
There you go. But he just jumped in. And my daughter, even though she's only a sophomore, she's jumped into an executive leadership role at the sorority.
Mm-hmm.
And is, you know, so
right.
I like to think that they understand the power of dreams because they've actually lived in a family that we've not only believed in dreams, but we've actually been pursuing them and bringing them to life. And I hope that continues for them.
I'm sure that you meet people who are in that, you know, there are those stages that people go through before they're ready to try something. And I want to say it's like pre-contemplative, like they're thinking about it. Or they're thinking about, I think pre-contemplative might be thinking about it, and then contemplative is thinking about it. But how do you get people to move in the direction that you are trying to coax them? And again, what I'm really talking about is how do you help people overcome their fear or embrace it and say, okay, I am going to do this. This is going to be scary. This is out of my comfort zone. But at a minimum, I'm going to grow from this experience, even if it's not successful. I mean, we always learn more from our failures than from our successes,
that's right.
Typically. So, like, failing can be very good. It can be useful.
That's right. Well, I talk about this concept called the ladder of intentionality.
Yes.
And I think the lowest rung on the ladder of intentionality is just thinking about something. So that's your. So maybe
right.
there's a rung zero, which is your pre-contemplative or whatever that is. But anyway,
right.
So let's say. So I say like the lowest rung on the ladder of intentionality is where you think about something because. There's no intentionality there. An idea kind of comes in, it rattles around in your brain for a little while and then leaves, and no one's the wiser. Now, it's an important rung. It's because, you know, you got to start climbing at some point because there may be an idea or two or a dream or two that stick around, right? And that's
absolutely
good. You know, like, that's good. You can sort of chew on those for a little bit, but a lot of them will just come and go. So there's no intentionality. So I think the next rung up on the ladder of intentionality is actually to write something down.
Right.
And when you write it down, all of a sudden it feels a little heavier. It feels a little bit more like, oh, really? Because someone can hold you accountable to that idea now or to that dream. And that person may very well be yourself.
Exactly.
You know, come back to it. You know, that's why we like to-do lists. We like to write our to-do lists and then we cross them off and it feels like we've accomplished something, right?
Oh, you're reading my mind. I love those. And you're saying, this is on, you start on page 59 with this, but you're saying that the thinking about it, you're still very safe, right? So you say when you're
that's
writing
right.
it down, you're starting to get a little more out of your little safety
comfort
bubble.
Zone.
Yeah.
That's right. So your risk is going up a bit, right? Because you've
mm-hmm.
written it down. And now...
Yeah.
Then you take a big step up when you declare it out loud. So that's the next rung on the ladder. So not only have you written it down, but now you're declaring your dream out loud. And what I counsel in the book is start declaring it out loud to friends and family so that you know whatever feedback you're going to get is coming from a place of love and not from a place of trying to put you down. So you may still get pushback, and that's fine, but you know it's coming from the right place. But when you declare it, all of a sudden it takes on a whole new level of intentionality and weight. Like, I would like to sail around the world with my children. Suddenly, you know, you're expressing it out loud, or again, whatever your dream is, I would like to get fit by the end of the year, and this is what it looks like, then you know, your intentionality is up, is really at a whole new level. But I think you're at the highest rung of the ladder of intentionality when you declare it out loud in such a way that you get everybody else around you talking about it. Because two things happen. One is you start to actually feel responsible. You don't want to let them down either, right? Because, you know, like, you've made this declaration. But the magic thing that happens is you suddenly created a support system to lift you up and help you achieve your dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, that's the magic that happens when you declare it in such a way that you get other people talking about it, and you can achieve amazing things when you get to that level of intentionality.
Now, we hear these stories all the time where someone says, oh, I had this idea, or I wanted to do this thing, and everyone told me, oh my gosh, you're crazy. You don't always get supportive reactions from people, because often what you're doing might trigger their own fear.
Oh, absolutely. Because at the end of the day, you've got to be accountable for not what they think you can do, but what you think you can do.
Or even identifying maybe the core group, a core group, and it doesn't have to be big. Maybe it's even just one person, or maybe, you know, it's two people that you can tell who are going to be supportive. Because if you're entering this with any kind of trepidation, you know, my experience with people is they can hook on something someone says as an excuse for them not continuing to move forward. Well, you know what, Susie's right. She said this is going to be really difficult for me to do. Or in the case of you sailing around the world with your kids, look, your kids are obviously going to miss out a lot with their peer group, and they're going to fall behind in terms of their studies. There's no way you can homeschool them the way that they can be taught in the, you know, a traditional school setting.
Yeah.
All of that kind of stuff. I'm sure there were parents who were talking badly behind your back. Let's be honest.
Oh, I'm sure there were. that's where it gets to that. Those are all of the, like, if you're vague on your dream,
right,
those are all of the fears, obstacles, and dreads that'll paralyze you. But
right,
what I would suggest is, and I talk about, I unpack, as you know, in the book, I unpack the word courage.
Yes.
I think you do have to have, you know, when you make those kind of, when you're declaring it out loud and getting other people talking about it, simultaneously, and maybe this again is a muscle that you just have to, I think, work on and build, which is you've got to listen, you've got to have the humility, first of all, to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And accept reality quickly. So I may have a dream, a very specific dream, that by summer of next year, I want to be a NASCAR driver. And I may tell everybody about it and get everybody really excited about it. But then, you know, I'm telling somebody and they say, well, you don't know how to drive a NASCAR car.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's not an inconsequential detail.
Like
it could get in the way of me achieving the dream.
Right.
So then I have to define, I need to have the humility and the ability to listen and accept that reality quickly and realize that part of the planning and preparation I need to do is actually to learn how to drive a NASCAR car, not only drive it, but be able to win races and qualify and da-da-da-da.
Absolutely. No, I totally get it. Well, this, not the NASCAR driving thing, but I have a similar story in that years ago I decided that I wanted to do an Ironman triathlon, but I'd never done a triathlon of any length before. And in fact, I did not know how to swim and I didn't own a bike. But I was running, and I went to a friend who had done an Ironman triathlon and who was just a little bit crazy himself. And I said, here's what I want to do. Do you think I can do it? And he's like, yeah, I think you can. You need to learn how to swim, and you need to get a bike, and then here's the training program. Oh, and I said, I'm going
to
do it in 5 months. But I have to tell you, there were only a handful of people who I told I was doing this, because it was a little crazy. And I knew there were going to be a lot of people who said, oh, have you done, how many other triathlons have you done? or have you done like the Olympic length? I hadn't done anything. Or how long have you been swimming? Oh, well, I don't know how to swim. I knew how to dog paddle. I knew how to stay afloat. anyway, so I think sometimes it's, you need to be, and if you have friends who are very cautious or who have really high anxiety about stuff, they probably aren't the people who are going to be your cheerleaders in all of this, because they're going to be nervous for you. And if you're trying, you know, so I guess what the reason that I bring all of this up is because I think it's really easy to, I think you want to avoid optional obstacles is all I'm saying. And that sometimes,
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree. I mean, if you know going in it's going to be a disaster, then don't go there. If you know it's going to be a derailer, then
right. If you know that
there.
Someone's going to, yeah, if you go tell your friend who's a baker that you want to lose 10 pounds and she starts making cookies for, I mean, that's not going to work. But you're right. It takes courage, but we all have it. And the thing that's really, one of the things that's really wonderful about your book is that you are bringing that kind of core that we all possess out of us and kind of challenging us and giving us the tools to identify and act on these dreams.
Yeah, that's what I... What I'm hoping, I mean, my life mission is to try and help as many businesses and people unleash their full potential. And so while it's obviously not a guarantee, all I'm trying to recount here is that what's in the book is not theoretical mumbo jumbo. I've actually seen it work both in business context. It's the foundation of my, you know, one of my companies is a consulting company. But I've also just seen it happen throughout the course of my career and my personal life. And so it just hopefully gives some people a relatively straightforward framework and approach to get back to, okay, so this really powerful thing called dreams that I don't think we're prioritizing enough.
I agree. And do you have a suggestion for people who are listening? By the way, re-mentioned the book is All Dreams on Deck by Jeremy Cage. And we'll get... Jeremy, how can people find you? You have a website as well?
Yeah. So the book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and at most bookstores at this point. It was launched at the beginning of the year. So at this point, it has a pretty decent distribution. And my website is thecagegroup.org.
So what do you recommend for people starting out? Do you think that, because we're talking about dreams in different areas of of our lives, right? So is it the area, should I focus on an area that maybe I'm least satisfied with? Or what is the best approach? And follow-up question, what do you find most people are struggling with? Is it a work dream? Is it acting on a work dream or a personal dream? Or
so my in terms of where to start, what I suggest is, and you can either do this as an individual or do this as a couple, and I'll speak more to that in just a second, but write down a list of every dream you have, big and small, regardless of kind of quote-unquote category.
Mm-hmm.
The first pass is should
stream
be
of
all about
kind of.
Well, yeah, quantity, not quality, and kind of keep coming back to it, because we're so not used to prioritizing our dreams that, you know, first I find people, you know, like they'll do a list and there'll be like 10 dreams on it, and then they'll like come back to it and they're like, oh yeah, but what about this? What about that? What about that? So make that list as long as you possibly can, and then really step back and relook at it where you can combine dreams into one bigger dream. Great, mm-hmm. But then try and identify what are the five or whatever number is that you're comfortable with that are really the most important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's a great exercise to do at any point in your life, I think, whether you're starting your career, whether you're stuck midlife and you just don't know where to go, or whether you're just retiring or what have you. I think it's a great exercise to do. This is something that my wife and I did when we first got married. And I guarantee, I highly recommend the exercise. I guarantee that you're going to learn something about your partner or spouse or whatever.
Yeah, maybe do it before you get married, folks.
Well,
right?
That's not a bad idea.
I'm happy it worked out for you, but I think so often people, we're excited about a relationship and we're maybe thinking a little more short term than long term, or at least how we're going to function together. And so I would say you call it the grab bag, but I would call it like values. Make sure your values are kind of matching up
sure.
so that you can, dream big and pursue these dreams together, or at least be supportive of each other if you're pursuing things that are different, right?
And the great thing about this exercise is you're doing it in a context where you're not fighting about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is oftentimes when dreams come to the surface, and that's the worst. I never knew you wanted to be a NASCAR driver.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the right time to have that conversation. So,
is that a real dream?
No, it's not. I
love that you're using it as an example, but then I had to know if it was real.
No, it's not a real dream. My wife went into one room with a bottle of red wine, and I was in a different room. We did our whole list, and then we...
Well, what did you have a bottle of? Why are you outing her on her bottle of red wine?
No, so she had... we did this, and it takes a whole evening, at least.
Yeah.
And then you do the prioritizing, and then we got together, and turned out that one of her top priorities was to travel the world, and one of mine was, or top dreams, if you will, was to really travel the world and explore,
mm-hmm.
and one of mine was to sail around the world. So we said, okay, well, you know what, that's a great one for us to put together and have as a common life dream together, and it makes your relationship, I think, a lot more intentional. And there are some things that were on her list that, I'm not particularly, interested in, but I know they're important to her now and I could support her in those. And the same goes for me. So
yeah. Was one of your dreams to write a book?
Yes. But it wasn't actually, not initially, because you end up achieving dreams. And so then we try and renovate this every so often. And so, yeah, so writing a book but not so much just to write the book, but to help as many people as possible unleash their full potential that they define in themselves.
Well, that's the great thing about books is there's no way you can reach a bigger audience than to have that information out there. So
it wasn't a book per se. It was more the message that I wanted to get out as powerfully as possible. Yeah.
Well, it's very clear, and I read at least a book every week for this show, and I can always feel the passion of the author that they're really writing about something that they care about, and that's certainly true with your book, and it makes for a really powerful message, and it's really important that you shared it, and you did a really great job. And it is a really good, important message, and that's why I got so many notifications on LinkedIn that people were liking your posts. So congratulations on your book.
Thanks so much, Michelle.
It was a real treat chatting with you. Again, the book is All Dreams on Deck, Charting the Course for Your Life and Work by Jeremy Cage. Thank you, and... continue to dream big and inspire the rest of us to do so as well.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It's really been a pleasure.
It's been terrific. I'll be back next week with another great guest. In the meantime, be well.
Do you panic when you don't receive an immediate response to a text, email, or a voicemail? Do you become clingy or demanding when you feel someone pulling away? Do you stay in unhealthy relationships because it's better than being alone? Or do you avoid relationships altogether? If you answer yes to any of these questions, you may struggle with fear of abandonment. This fear can trigger intense feelings of jealousy and anxiety that result in unhelpful behaviors that ultimately sabotage your relationships. Psychologist Michelle Skeen's powerful book, Love Me, Don't Leave Me, will help you develop a new perspective about yourself and others, and you will learn to recognize and change the behaviors that are hurting your relationships. You deserve to have closer, loving, and lasting connections. To find out how, go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's www.michelleskeen.com.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.